Yes, fish eaters, the days of troublesome scaling, cutting, and gutting are over. Because Super Bassomatic 76 is the tool that lets you use the whole bass with no fish waste without scaling, cutting, or gutting. Here's how it works. Catch a bass, remove the hook, and drop the bass. That's the whole bass into the Super Bassomatic 76. Now adjust the control dial so that that bass...
Well, pour yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. Well, this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn.
Joining me now is someone I have been a fan of for most of my life. He is an original member of the Not Ready for Primetime Players on Saturday Night Live. He conceived and starred in the film Ghostbusters. He was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor for his work in 1989's Driving Miss Daisy. Other films include The Blues Brothers, Trading Places, Gross Point Blank, Tommy Boy, and the list goes on and on. In 1992, he founded the House of Blues, and in 2007, he and artist John Alexander launched Crystal Head Vodka. I am absolutely thrilled and honored to welcome to the show Mr. Dan Aykroyd. Dan, how are you?
Did your mom call you Daniel?
She did.
Yes. Daniel.
Daniel, my brother. How are you, man?
I'm good. Thanks for the intro. Geez, I'd forgotten all about all that stuff.
All the stuff you've done.
You know, the point is that we did that with great collaborators, great directors, great actors, great writers. And it was a collaborative effort always. And I just worked with the best. I got to work with all kinds of wonderful people. Eddie Murphy, Bill Murray, Robert Redford, Sidney Poitier, River Phoenix.
You've done it. Well, I should bring this up, Dan. You've also, I don't know, you're probably not aware of this, but you and I have co-starred in a production together. In 2014, you did a video for Tales of the Cocktail for the Spirited Awards down at Tales of the Cocktail. It was an intro video with Crystal Head Vodka. I was in that film as well. So you and I are co-stars, my friend.
Excellent, very good. We should. How's your agent doing for you?
Yeah, but the New York Times. A.O. Scott described my work as transcendent. Yeah, uh-huh. So it was very nice.
That was in New Orleans, and we were set up in the parking lot there.
Yeah, we did the whole. I was in the part that I shot was actually up here in Los Angeles. But the video, for those of you listening out there, Tales of the Cocktail is a huge cocktail festival held in New Orleans every year, except this year, and they have an award ceremony called the Spirited Awards, which is the Oscars of the booze business. And Dan was gracious enough to take part in this video. Really an excellent video where Dan, the hosts of the show, Simon Ford and Tom Caltabiano, are trying to get to the awards, and they run into Dan, and Dan tempts them with some Crystal Head, and things go awry from there.
Right. Yeah, that's a wonderful event, the cocktail, Tales of the Cocktail. It really showcases the bar chefs in the industry, new products, what's happening in the culture of conviviality. Which are these bars and restaurants that we go to. This is where conviviality will re-begin and will restart. It's going to start at the corner bar. All of it's going to start at the corner bar, and Tales of the Cocktail celebrates that culture, which of course is now in suspension, unfortunately.
It is.
Yeah.
So Dan, it was around 2007 that you launched Crystal Head. I guess the first question would be, so you did it with your friend, John Alexander, the artist. How did you become friends with him, and how did you start talking about doing a vodka together in the first place?
Well, Johnny and I knew each other from New York. I was working on SNL, and I had a girlfriend, Rosie Schuster, the writer, on the show there. And we worked on a lot of fun stuff together, and we were in love. And then I went off to, I think, to do the Blues Brothers, and she fell in love with Johnny, and she dumped me for him. And, So she introduced us subsequently, and we became great friends. And as she says now, well, now at least you have each other. So we had a wonderful friendship. And then he, as an artist, you know, he was talking to me one night about, you know, the spirits business, because I brought Patron to Canada. I brought Patron into Canada with J.P. DeJoria, the great entrepreneur.
No, J.P. He's been on this show.
Yeah. Jory, we brought the Patron to Canada, making it the number one luxury tequila in the country now, with a good percentage of sales. And we introduced luxury tequila to Canada. You could only get two brands, I won't say them, back then. And so we bought Patron in as the luxury brand, the superior premium brand, which Canada did not have. Now, Canadians enjoy Patron all the time. So we were talking about that, John Alexander and I, and he said, well, I've always wanted to put tequila, you know, in a skull. And I said, well, a skull. I said, well, draw that up. And I said, I can't do a tequila because I'm loyal to JP. I wouldn't do a tequila to compete with the Patron franchise in Canada. But I said, yeah, skull, we'll draw that up. And he drew up this beautiful skull in about 2 minutes. I thought, well, draw it up. And I was going to come back a month later. You have a drawing for me. In 2 minutes, on a brown piece of paper with a beautiful pen, he drew up the beautiful skull. I looked at it. I thought, we have to put a non-polluted fluid in there. And vodka is the biggest category. So let's see if we can go get a piece of the vodka market with this beautiful bottle, but let's do something different with the vodka. You couldn't put a polluted vodka in this bottle. It's just too pretty. It's too beautiful. So we did something that is new in the industry. We changed the industry. We stripped all the fusel oils out of our product. No limonene, no added sugar, and no glyceride. No glycerol at all in our product. So that's why it's won awards and it's selling today after 10 years of existence. Yeah.
Now, are you still making it in Newfoundland?
Yeah, the water, that's the whole source. It's because of the water we're there. Water is very sweet there, and it makes a perfect base for our peaches and cream corn mash. In other words, the peaches and cream corn that you get, that fat kernel that you get in the autumn and the late summer growing, and it goes into the supermarket for human consumption. It's not the cattle corn. This is a beautiful fat kernel. We call it peaches and cream because it's viscous. We don't need oil. We have peaches and cream viscosity in there in our mash. We don't need sweetness. We have the sweetness of the Newfoundland water. And we don't need limonene because we're not out to disguise our alcohol. Sometimes limonene and glycerol are used to disguise the scent of alcohol, and we're not afraid. We like our scent. It smells like a good clean alcohol drink, which is what we're all about. A lot of vodkas you smell and they smell like perfume or they smell like nothing. And so ours has a good clean scent to it.
I'm gonna open mine up right now. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things you famously filter this vodka 7 times, 3 of which go through crystals known as Herkimer diamonds. Now, I'd like to ask you, Dan, because I've had lots of people ask me this over the years. I was a writer for the Rob Report and Playboy, and they would ask about your vodka. And I want to get your opinion on this. How does that step in the process impact the flavor profile of this vodka?
Well, I will get to that. And we have the peaches and cream mash. No one takes the trouble to make vodka that we do. We truck the mash a third of the way across Canada onto a 9-hour ferry ride. It's married with the water at the distillery. The distillery is the last state-owned still in the world, the government of the province of Newfoundland Labrador Liquor Distillery Corporation. So it's a government manufacturer, very clean.
That means, just to cut you off, that means higher standards, right?
You can't have a product do anything unless the standard and quality is there. So we got to start with that. So we start with that. And then we filter, we do a shaken agitated charcoal, not just a sponge, an agitated charcoal filtration. And then we do the micron filtration through steel. And then we go to the Herkimer diamond. The Herkimer diamond is found in 3 areas of the world: Oaxaca, Mexico, in Afghanistan, in a valley there, and in upstate New York, in Herkimer, New York, near Rome, New York. And they're these double-sided crystals, and they're all different colors, yellow, blue, green, red. And you go in the summer and you lease a plot from a farmer there, and he'll let you go and dig up the crystals and take as many as you want home. They bubble up to the surface of the earth, unlike kimberlite diamonds that you have to go down and dig a pipe for and dig a mine. So we take those diamonds, we take the whitest ones of those, And we take them and that's our last pour. We pour that satiny, beautiful vodka over the diamonds for the last finish. Now, at the end of a few months, those diamonds seem to have a discoloration. They're filtering something out of there. Your high school physics chemistry teacher would say, well, pouring C2H5O6, you know, alcohol over a crystalline structure, that's not going to do anything to the alcohol. However, we have done tests where we pour it over the diamonds and we don't. And people like it when we pour it over the diamonds. They like the taste of it better poured over the diamonds. And also the diamonds are discolored. After a few months, we have to get more of them. So something is being filtered out of there. And I think it's spiritual energy, the last spiritual detritus of bad energy in all of the process and travel where that liquid has gone through. And finally, at the end, you have the purest liquid possible out there. And certainly it's borne out by our awards and our notes, sweet, vanilla, dry, crisp, with a kick of heat off the finish. We have beautiful notes on our wheat vodka as well. And the Herkimer diamonds, you see, are very mysterious. They're kind of like the head. The head is a mysterious legend. It was supposed to have been used as a scrying device, a crystal ball by the Navajo, the Anasazi. They call them the skulls from the Star Children. The Maya had them in myth and legend. So,
and the Navajo believed they came from extraterrestrials, right?
Yeah, the Star Children. They said they became from the Star Children. So the crystals there are in these three anomalous areas of the world, and one of them is near Rome, New York, which is near Griffiths Air Force Base. And, you know, in a way, you know, we're linking Star Children to the Navajo. When we think about the skull, we're thinking about that in legend. There were a lot of scrambles against UFOs up in Griffiths there in upstate New York until it was decommissioned. And so the diamond field is right near there. Maybe some of the ships that were being scrambled against were there just, they had this beautiful diamond field on their scanner and they were there as tourists. That's my theory.
That's your theory.
Anyway, yeah, so it helps. It helps in the taste and something's being filtered out of there. And we continue to use the diamonds as part of our story.
When you launched this, you said that the brand was about enlightenment and spiritual awakening. And here we are 13 years later in the era of Donald Trump. Do you worry at all that it's not working?
Well, I think in this age of, you know, of such adversity and to our spirit and to our emotional well-being, that a palliative for those who can consume it moderately is a necessity. It helps if you have a good clean vodka to put in a cocktail at night to watch the evening news with, because boy, we need it these days. We are into the business here. Yeah. Almost 13 years, worldwide awards everywhere. We consume moderately so we can talk about it and enthuse about it. But again, you have to be careful. It's, you know, a head is not to be drunk by one person. It's to be drunk by five, hopefully. And indeed, sitting around the campfire and discussing events, there's nothing like a cold shot of the head with a little lime. Oh, I like it with a tangerine juice. I pour it over ice and I take and squeeze, hand squeeze tangerine juice right in there like you're squeezing the yolk out of an egg. And then mix that, just that, maybe a little honey sometimes I'll put in there and shake it up or mix it. So that's the crystal driver. And then as a straight up martini, the thing's amazing. It just, you'll see if you have ice, if you have any ice there.
I got ice right here. Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay. Pour a little ice there and you'll see you'll smell the clean alcohol, and then you'll feel the natural viscosity, and then our notes, sweet, vanilla, dry, crisp with a kick of heat off the finish. That's why it's so amazing in cocktails. It's got fire that climbs over the cocktails. Cocktails cannot overwhelm Crystal Head. Bar chefs love it. It's the blank canvas for bar chefs to do what they're going to do. It's amazing. You know, Dan, what they put in drinks today. Maple sugar, emulsified sugar, you know, Fernet Branc, elderberry flour, egg white. They mix all kinds of other liqueurs in there. All kinds of things. Red Bull, all kinds of things go in vodka. So Crystal Head bar chefs like it because it's the virgin canvas in which to use these other additives. I like it pure and I like it, you know, in a cocktail.
Well, it certainly holds its own. I can tell you, Dan mentioned earlier the awards. I'm a judge at the San Francisco World Spirits Competition, one of the more prestigious.
Anthony Gaius Blue is a fan of ours.
Anthony's a big fan. And Crystal Head took home the top prize in vodka a couple of years ago, right?
Consistently there. We've been in the running there. We've been not at the top, right in the running. And
double again, gold. You've gotten double gold up there, right?
Yeah. We have. And our notes from him just sent me off the highway. Sweet, vanilla, dry, crisp with a kick of heat off the finish. Boy, as a vodka manufacturer, what can do better than that? That's exactly what we wanted to achieve, that kind of a robust quality and something that stands out. For the wheat vodka, the notes are star, pepper, anise, with a little more fire. Those are good for Bloody Marys. They have a little more kind of a spicy to them, those bottles of the wheat. And that's our mirror finish. I've only got the little finish here. Let me see. There's a 750 of our mirror, of our clear, yeah. And then this. And I don't see a mirror. I don't have one here. Ah, they sold out. What can I do?
Well, Dan, speaking of selling out, you teed it up for me. You're one of the first celebrities to get into the game. There were you, Sammy Hagar, there were a handful of people. Now, the second you book a big movie, your agent's like, all right, what spirit do you want to attach your name to? So you were one of the first, and you've been definitely one of the more successful people doing this. When you look around, in fact, it was just announced this week that our friend Ryan Reynolds just sold Aviation Gin for $650 million to Diageo. Do you ever think about, I'm sure you've been approached. Have you ever thought about selling the brand, or is it too dear to you?
Well, first of all, we've been approached, sure. Several, many times by really credible operators. Right now, we enjoy being a part of it. You know, you sell the brand, then you got a whole pile of money, and then there's no brand and no fun of dealing with the business and meeting our distributors and going to the houses and seeing the people who own these companies, the on-premise operators who built these businesses from nothing, the distribution houses, the, you know, going to the conventions, the government conventions, having dinner with liquor board supervisors in these states agencies, which we have a great relationship with. So it's really fun.
You enjoy that. You are enthusiastic about the spirits business.
It's fun. Yeah. I mean, you know, here they say to me, you must stay in this 5-star hotel. You must eat at this 9-star restaurant. You must eat with the lieutenant governor of the state. You know, this is the work I'm given to go out there and then to sip vodka with them. Now, the reason that Aviation sold so well is because, one, they have an excellent quality product. You can't start anything without that. That Aviation gin is a excellent product. It's high quality. It's a beautiful product, well-priced. Then they have the magic of Ryan Reynolds' celebrity status going in there and helping it online with social media. But also he got out into the field. He did the real work. He went and met the people. He said hello to them. He embraced the industry. That's what you have to do. And so that kind of work will yield a great success, but you have to start with quality. It's a lovely package as well. And all the pluses were going for him there and them, his partners.
So I put the word out, Dan, that I was going to be talking to you on social media, and people went crazy, and I invited them to lob some questions that I would then ask you. So I want to throw a couple that came in via social media. We'll start here. Sarah Reister said to ask you to put the opening directly on top of the head so she can put a candle in it after the vodka is gone. Will you take that under advisement?
Well, you mean she wants the spout straight up and down?
Straight up and down, yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what makes us distinctive is that little cant. You know, if it were straight up and down, believe me, it would cost less to fill at the factory with the machines. But we like that cant in it. You can put a candle in there. It's just, you know, you got to kind of tweak it, I guess, or bend it.
You got to turn it a little bit.
Bend it at the base, I suppose. Yeah. Well, lots of people put candles in there. I've seen them. Yeah, right thickness. With the right thickness in the hole,
you can do it.
The right thickness. Yeah, the right candle thickness goes in the hole, it will work. If it's too thin, it'll wobble. Yeah.
Patty Shikram Costantino said, what are some of the more creative ways you've heard about people repurposing the skulls after the vodka runs out?
Zippered black leather, rhinestones, gold plating, brass plating. Chandeliers, hood ornaments for cars, light fixtures, furniture, glass wall for showers, On our website, World Wide Web, crystalhead.com, you'll see the thousands of things artists have done with it. And the artistic community really embraced it, as they should. It's from two artists, my friend John Alexander, the artist. My friend is an artist. I'm an artist, a writer, right? And so, the artistic community loved the design of it and embraced it. And then so there's thousands of things that they've done. They fill it with model airplane paint, M&Ms, colored sand. Sometimes they will do these cocktails where they'll lop the whole top off the bottle and they'll do a big Mai Tai in there. Just wonderful use of the bottles. Yeah, it's been so much fun. That's been a great aspect of it. But it wouldn't be anything. We wouldn't be here where we are today unless the fluid really
held up. And it does. Speaking along those lines of interesting things, did you hear about the forensic artist in Scotland, Dan, who reconstructed a face based on the body? I went and looked at it. The good-looking face there.
Well, yeah, it was a bit kind of on the side of the Neanderthal, Saxon warrior. Yeah. Yeah, interesting.
The guy's name was Nigel Cockerton, by the way. If someone's
Well, that's a name.
Nigel Cockerton.
Stand up and be proud of that one. Stand up and be proud. But that was really good work and really, really exciting to see that they could take, which they do in the crime solving all the time, and to take our bottle that way and actually build it out. It wasn't the
Pretty
face
amazing.
I was thinking. It wasn't the face I was thinking of when we launched, but. Anyway, our skull has a happy little grin. It's a happy, happy skull.
Heather McGovern wanted me to thank you for the Pride edition this year. So just so everybody knows, back in May, they came out with a rainbow-colored bottle, Crystal Head Vodka, that you guys have been supporting the LGBTQ community for years. The Kaleidoscope Trust, Stonewall Sports Program, Test Positive Awareness Network, Lurie's Children's Hospital Transgender Youth Program. And this year you did a special bottle, $50, money going towards these various great causes. And apparently this is something you're going to do now every year.
You know, it's been, yes, but we've been supporting that community, but that community has been supporting us since we first came out. They've embraced us, the LGBTQ community. I think it has to do a little bit with, of course, the mass appeal of the skull. You know, everybody likes the skull, but, you know, we're a Canadian vodka. We're not a Russian vodka. And the stance that Russia now, has against gay people is something that needs to be addressed and corrected somehow. This is primitive thinking. In Chechnya, there are white vans coming up and grabbing gay people off the street and abducting them, and you never see them again. So I think that there may be there's a little bit of a political, political view of our product as Canadian. It's a safe Canadian vodka. It's not a Russian vodka. A lot of multiple bar operators in the LGBTQ bar operator community embrace us for that reason. But again, it's just because, hey, we embrace all people. We come from Canada. A diverse and tolerant society. And the quality of our vodka is there. The design is something that appeals to the LGBT community because they have a flamboyant and, I would say, colorful design sense in terms of dress and decor. And they're among our most beautiful visual stylists, if you will. Look at Queer Eye for Straight Man, how they take and manage those cases. I'm a candidate for that.
Me and you both.
So we do embrace them. They've embraced us, and we have a great union there, and that's going to continue. There's a bar in Chicago in Boys Town. They've got the big head, the big head behind me. They have that downstairs, upside down. They're pouring cocktails for brunch, you know. And so they're just great customers for us. And I had a lovely lecture session there. Last summer, I was supposed to go again there for Blues Fest, but that's all off. That when I go to Chicago now, that's one of my first stops is on a Saturday night to see that community. It's really fun.
Folks, I've never admitted this on the show before, but I'm a guy. Yeah, it's true. And as a guy, I'm here to tell you that so much of our identity is wrapped up in our hair. That's why when we get into our 20s and 30s and start noticing the first signs of hair loss, it definitely feels like panic time. Because let's face it, no guy is ever ready to go bald. Thankfully, now there's Keeps, the simple and easy way to keep your hair. You used to have to go to the doctor's office for your hair loss prescription. Now, thanks to Keeps, you can visit a doctor online and get hair loss medication delivered right to your home. Treatments start at just $10 per month. Plus, for a limited time, you can get your first month free. That's right, free. How? Well, if you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to keeps.com/drinking. That's KEEPS.com/drinking to receive your first month of treatment for free. Take care of your hair, and your hair will take care of you. Speaking of the big cities, Dan, I hail from Philadelphia, where you made one of your, in my opinion, certainly one of the, your best films, Trading Places. Mm-hmm. What was your, in fact, I worked, when I was in college, I worked at the Rittenhouse Hotel, right off Rittenhouse Square, which is where you shot a lot of the movie there. I think that's where the Duke brothers lived and Eddie was on the street begging. That's right off Rittenhouse. What was your experience like in Philadelphia? I'm sure you've been back there since then, but you know.
Well, first of all, really wonderful, friendly people. Do you know Larry Corman, the developer?
I don't know.
Okay, well, you know, one of the great magnanimous people. Really friendly, just wonderful people. Great crews, great local crews when we had them there. It's a beautiful architectural city. It was where really the paleontology trade started because of the museums there. It's an educated, sophisticated city that embraced us when we came there. I remember I was staying at the CP Hotel, but some of the crew was staying at the Bellevue Stratford. And yep. Subsequently, I visited there after the Legionnaires' disease
with
John
right.
Belushi. When we were driving across country, we purposely stayed there after that plague. But it was just a beautiful time, and the city was photographed beautifully, wonderfully. Landis made it really look great. And we weren't there long enough. I think we were only there a couple of weeks. And, would love to go back. Would love to make a movie there. And anywhere in Pennsylvania, I'd love to make a movie.
Dan, when you talk about driving across country with Belushi, was this right before he died?
No, this was in the early years, right in Saturday Night Live and Blues Brothers days. And the show would break, and then we would find a drive-away car from somebody that needed it delivered across country. We'd put our Nakashima stereo in the back, and away we'd go, you know. And he loved that. He loved the drive across.
Well, the reason I bring it up, Dan, is this is a story I've not told before. So I was friends with and used to work with Hunter S. Thompson.
Oh, and as well. I knew him well.
I know you know Hunter. And so you've been out to Al Farm before, I imagine. Yep. And so there was Al Farm was Hunter's house, and it was there was a very museum-like quality to it. He collected a lot of things over the years.
I saw.
And everything was around. So there was one item for me, a particular fascination. And the story that, as I know it, is that so over the kitchen sink, and the kitchen was the sort of the nerve center of Hunter's house, and pinned up over the kitchen sink was a Polaroid picture of John Belushi and Hunter S. Thompson that Hunter told me was taken. John was driving cross country, and I believe this is true, right before he died. He drove across the country and he stopped at Hunter's place, and then he went to California. Does that ring true to you?
I know he was at Hunter's place at some point when he was shooting Continental Divide.
Yeah.
Because he was in Colorado. But the last summer of, I can pretty well clock his movements there from the last time I saw John, and that he would have been in New York about, that last summer in Martha's Vineyard was heaven, because I had him off the powders and pills. All he was doing was having a little brandy and smoking dope. And he wasn't agitated. It was no anxiety. He was sleeping good. He'd come over and lie on the couch at my place. We'd watch stuff. Judy and him were free-flowing, going back and forth. My friend the Viking would cook soup for him. It was just a wonderful summer. Then in the autumn, he got back to New York and had to go out for these meetings, and he flew out to L.A. And I saw him sort of peeking over the hood of the roof of a limousine, white limousine, headed to Jersey for some reason. And he went over there, and I imagine he was scoring dope that night, but he flew to L.A. And I think the pressures of the business and also his respiratory wasn't that strong. And also the woman misjudged the dose of the, you know, well, how can you misjudge a speedball? You shouldn't be playing with that shit at all. I mean, yeah. To misjudge him. You know, she didn't mean to kill him any more than I did. And, I think that it was a combination of things. But no, he wasn't driving across country at that point. No.
So I might have gotten it wrong because, as you can imagine, a lot of these stories with Hunter, we were all out of our minds on drugs. So maybe I got it wrong. But I do know that he had told me that this photo was one of the last pictures of John alive, taken of John alive. This is what Hunter said. Maybe he meant it was the last photo that he ever took with John.
Maybe, yeah. But I do remember he saw him a lot during the making of the movie, and then he came back. That was John's last movie, Continental Divide. Then he came back to New York.
Well, that photo was hanging up over the sink.
Uh-huh.
And so you remember when Hunter died, Johnny Depp threw a big, memorial.
Yes.
So I went there, and there was about 250 people there, and they constructed a whole outdoor area, like a lounge area. So the house was just where people put their coats. So I went into that house at one point with a friend. I'm going to guess it was probably to do some illegal drugs or something in the bathroom. And then I was standing in the kitchen, and I was all alone, and no one's in the house. And I had this crazy moment. I was a little bit out of my mind, and I'm staring at the photo. Now Hunter's dead, and I know there's going to be all legal wrangling about his stuff, and I had this angel and devil thing going on in my head. It was going, take it, just take it. Hunter would want you to have it, right? Okay,
you're probably right.
You'll protect it. And then the other side's going, you can't take it. You're stealing from a dead man, and it almost. Dan, it almost got like Lord of the Rings. I was reaching out like Gollum. I was like, my precious. And the woman walked out of the bathroom and said, hey, what are you doing? I was like, nothing. I didn't take it. And it probably ended up in a shoebox somewhere in a warehouse.
Fuck it. What are you talking about, Todd? Dan, of course you were supposed to have that pen. You should have grabbed that. What are you fucking talking about? Of course you were supposed to have it. What are you talking about?
You son of a bitch.
Yes, take it. Well, you son of a bitch. Take it. Oh, no. Beautiful.
So when you heard about John, do you remember where you were when you heard about it?
Oh, yeah. Sure. I was typing a line for him for Ghostbusters. I was at our office at 150 Fifth Avenue.
That's right.
Oh. It was about 8:30 in the morning. I'm typing a line for him, and the phone rings from L.A., and it's the manager telling him, and I got to get to Judy's house. Right now, she can't hear this on the radio. She can't see this in the newspaper. So I drop what I'm doing. I run out, run from 23rd Street and Fifth Avenue to Morton Street down in the village, run all the way. Pass a newsstand. It's already there. Like a minute after I hear about the thing, it's Belushi dead at 33. How did the news get so fast? How did they get the papers out? He was
33.
Kind of a time warp.
He was 33. Yep. God, does he seem old? He seems so much older to me because I was a child, I guess, when I first, mm-hmm. 33.
Yep. Yep. So I went and I rang the doorbell and Judy answered it. And, you know, I told her that he was gone. And, you know, but the two of us, he was really drifting at the end, and we were trying to get him back. I think had we gone out there a day or two before, you know, that's all what I'll live with always is I might have been able to catch him. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. All these years, I mean, it's been a long, long time, but it seems like it's still pretty painful.
I think of him every day.
Would you say he's one of the most talented people you've ever worked with?
Oh, no doubt. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He could really move and dance, and he was a very capable singer. And a great actor and comedian, and a really fine actor and comedian. He was very well read and very intelligent. Yeah, he was a very sharp guy.
Well, yeah, John would appreciate this question from Ted Glennon. He said, "Have you ever tried Crystal Skull in an orange whip?"
Oh yes, absolutely. Yes, that's right. Yeah, the head whip.
Is it called the head whip?
Oh yeah, the head whip. Yeah.
So that really is a thing. You've done that.
Yeah, I use a little meringue in it. Yeah, and, the orange whip is of course honeydew, and it's got some kind of a candy thing in there, like a meringue or it's like the, you know what a creamsicle is?
Sure.
Yeah, it's that filling. That's that. An orange whip should taste like a creamsicle, but loaded with crystal head. Wow, that's, you know, the creamsicle head. Yeah.
Beautiful.
That would be delicious. I'm going to try that Yeah, of course we do.
Nate Laird wants to know, are the diamonds used in the filtration process gluten-free? Okay, everybody's a comedian out there now, right?
No diamond. But most people don't realize that gluten is not an issue in alcohol production.
It does not survive distillation.
The heat does not survive. So you can have our wheat vodka. Yes, it's made with gluten, but you know, the essence of the gluten doesn't survive. It's burnt off. You know, you're getting water in the mash. That's it.
But you know what? I'll tell you, in terms of marketing genius, Dan, I'm sure you appreciate this, is, you know, Tito Beverage, that was a stroke of genius, putting those gluten-free on the Tito's vodka. Yep. Because I think people really, it helped. There was a lot of reasons why people embraced it, but that was one of the reasons is, oh, this is gluten-free. Yep. And I would tell people all of it's gluten-free.
Yeah, that's right. Marketing. Yeah. No. So the Liquor Control Board of Ontario would not let them put that on there. I wonder, I haven't checked a bottle of Tito's here. They told us we couldn't put gluten-free on ours.
In the States, it definitely was. Yeah. So yeah, yeah. Chris Maxwell said, just want to let you know, maybe this is somebody works for that Ka Tequila was in no way competing against or stealing the look of Crystal Head. Ka Tequila has bottles, Dan's, I'm sure you're aware, that look like a skull. Did you take notice when they came out with that?
We won in federal court when we found out that a sculptor from California was hired by the owner of Ka to copy our bottle.
Oh, I didn't know that.
We had two cases in federal court. We prevailed on appeal in the federal court in the Ninth District Court of Los Angeles before Judge Marshall, and in the end, a jury ruled, "Oh yeah, they copied you. Yep. They copied the cant at the top we were talking about. They copied our base." The width of the eyes. I took a ruler out in front of the jury. Oh, yeah. We won.
Now I feel like an asshole bringing this up. Sorry.
No, it's fine. Ka Tequila, they straight up ripped us off. The jury agreed with us because a sculptor sculpted the bottle at her request 4 months after we came out. Then she changed it a little bit, but she lied. She perjured herself. And so we won in federal court. We own now the trademark worldwide, pretty much bulletproof 100%. For the skull bottle, and that's for anything you want to put in it.
Okay.
Hot sauce. Yeah. It was a tough fight, but we won. No, they were robbers.
Robbers. Alden Kirkman said, "You are a lovely human." James Bowers.
Yeah. I am not human. I am from the planet Ramula. Well, you will be spared when my species overtakes your miserable planet.
Love it. James Bowers wants to know, have you ever given thought, and I've actually had this thought before too, to creating a bartender-friendly bottle that fits in a well?
We're not a well product because we're a premium product. We're meant to be on the back shelf displayed with premium products. We're meant to be lit up. We're meant to be to bring the eye to the bar, not in a well. A well, you want a well, you go and get your $8.99 vodka, not your Crystal Head. And there's no problem. Bartenders, let me tell you something. There is no problem handling this bottle, bartenders, okay? It's the only one you can throw up in the air like this, like a basketball. You can put it on your shoulder like this and have it talk to you. There's no problem. You grab it like this. You grab it by the face. You grab it here like this. You take off the cork and you pour it, okay? It's not a well product. Never will be. You grab it here. You want to grab it by the neck? You grab it here, by the face, here. It's maneuverable. It's to sit on the back bar and attract the eye to your bar. So maybe people aren't drinking vodka that night, but if your vodka is next to a fine whiskey, they see the skull and then see the whiskey. You're going to sell whiskey. You're going to sell tequila. You're going to sell everything with Crystal Head on your back bar.
Jonas Garvin, friend of mine on social media, Jonas Garvin said he wants to know, is Fred Garvin my real father?
Fred Garvin, male prostitute. Ladies and boys, come on. We'll take care of you. $50 a minute.
You just made Jonas Garvin very happy.
Fred Garvin, Jonas, my son, my good son. Watch it there, son. Adjust my truss for me, boy. You going to do some driving for me?
Chris Sawyer, sommelier friend of mine up in the Sonoma area, said he had a memorable evening with you and your gorgeous wife, Donna Dixon, a few years back. Ask him if he would suggest adding some vodka to the famed Fish-O-Matic medley. Now, I'm going to have to correct my friend Chris Sawyer there because I believe what he's talking about is the Bass-O-Matic 76, right?
You know what? That makes a great bouillabaisse, and vodka is frequently added to bouillabaisse. At least, you know, my aunt used to do it, and she was the Julia Child of Canada, and she used the Bass-O-Matic. That's when I first saw it, when I was 13 years old. I was in shock. She dropped the fish into the blender. What? I said, the head, the bones, everything. Oh, it's a bouillabaisse. And she poured some vodka in there. So it's a popular thing, vodka and bouillabaisse, yeah?
Yeah, okay, great. And then we also, Tim McDonald wants to know, what is in the mash bill these days?
Peaches and cream corn, Newfoundland water, filtration, that's it.
That's it.
And the wheat, sunset wheat from Yorkshire, England, Newfoundland water, again, which we harvest the wheat. We take the mash over there, we bring it in a boat. To the Newfoundland distillery, then we ship it out into the world. No one takes the trouble to make it as clean and high quality as we do. So it's just the mash and the water. That's it.
When you think about your legacy, Dan, I don't know if you do think about your legacy, but you've obviously got a tremendous body of work. You have accomplished a great deal, and I laid out a bunch of it at the top of the show. Where does Crystal Head fit in? And is this something? Obviously, it's something you're extremely proud of, but this is, as opposed to the collaborative things that you've done, and there's a collaboration here, but this is an idea that you and a friend had that you brought to fruition on your own. How do you feel about it now, 13 years in?
Well, we have 50 people working for us, 50 to 60 people working for us around the world, head office, agents. That's not counting the distributor chain. That's there'd be 1,000 if you our partners in distribution. 30 people on the line right now. So there are wonderful collaborators. I'll put it into perspective for you. I was nominated, as you said, for an Academy Award. It was wonderful to get that recognition. Grateful for it. I was nominated with John for a Grammy, Best New Artist of 1979. A wonderful recognition there. Won an Emmy for writing the Sissy Spacek Saturday Night Live show. Great recognition. I'm invested with the Order of Canada. It's a viceregal decoration given by the Governor General of Canada in the Queen's name, recognizing people who want to make the country and the world a better place. A wonderful, wonderful honor. I've been given the Order of Ontario for like services. But the award and honor that I cherish most was the prize we took at the Moscow Prodexpo Bar Show for excellent taste in Russia, a Canadian vodka in Russia at the bar show, unsolicited. We didn't even enter. And we won the Prodexpo Excellent Taste Medal. That's the greatest award I've ever had, no doubt.
Are you serious? Come on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
oh,
wait a minute. That award means more to you than being sitting at the Oscars.
To have it on the lips of real, of connoisseurs, and to have the product out in the world and have it recognized in that way, and to be able to talk about such an achievement, no doubt, because it's a tangible thing. Now, I won't diminish the work I did with my great collaborators in radio, television, records, film. Really great collaborators. And, I tried to supply a AAA product. So I'm not going to come into the vodka market with anything less than a AAA or quadruple A product. So
you're Canadian.
Proud of it. I'll tell you how. Yeah. I'll tell you. Well, don't lose your train of thought.
Go ahead.
But I'll tell you how Canadian I am. I was born on July 1st, Canada Day, in Ottawa, the capital. My grandfather at the time was a Royal Canadian Mounted Policeman. My father was a high Anglican Englishman. My dad, my mom, a French Canadian Catholic. So I'm very, very Canadian. Very Canadian.
Where in the pantheon of famous Canadians, and there are so many, and so many of them are.
Alan Thick. Alan Thick.
You're right below him. You're right there.
I'm below a lot. David Foster.
I mean, you got Marty Short, Seth
Short,
Rogen,
Paul Schaefer,
Michael
yep,
J.
Rogen.
Fox, Jim Carrey.
Yep.
I mean,
yep,
how
yep,
does
yep.
this?
John Candy.
How does this cut? I mean, who else are we forgetting here? I mean, there's so many. Well, Pam Anderson. Let's not forget Pam Anderson. Shatner, yeah. Michael Cera, Keanu Reeves. How does Matthew Perry? The list
Tom
goes.
Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise still lived in Ottawa as a kid.
Donald Sutherland.
Yeah.
You, though, when I think of luminaries from Canada, I think of you.
Well, if you'll put me in that pantheon, I'll gladly accept the. I'll elbow my way into the position and put my face out there. But I think in comedy, the reason that Canadians do so well, Catherine O'Hara, Eugene Levy, Marty Short, right? Hey, I mean, so they do well because we had the mixture. We had the British BBC and CBC comedy influence, the English Music Hall, Spike Milligan, the Goons, the Pythons. But we also had the American, Phil Silver, Desi Arnaz, Lucy, the sitcoms, Danny Thomas, Dick Van Dyke. So we had the confluence of Canadian-American television and that influence there, and kind of we knew how to blend it when we got on stage at Second City and kind of parody both cultures. I think that helped Canadians in comedy to create when they did.
When you got Saturday Night Live, Dan, what did you think when you got the gig? Was it like, well, I'm going to be on a network show? Or because I've read interviews with some of the other cast members, and it didn't seem like anybody had an idea that it was going to become the phenomenon that it did.
And is today.
Yeah, and still, I mean, it's the greatest. I think it's safe to say that no other show in the history of any medium has spawned as many
writers, careers, producers, directors, careers.
Incredible. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the body of work of the cast members of Saturday Night Live, and obviously you're right there. Did you have any inkling going in that you were part of something that was going to be even remotely that special?
Well, first of all, I don't think Lauren even knew that it would last. So he said, I'm not going in and doing a pilot or one or two or three. I want seven. You give me seven, I'll do this for you. Otherwise, it's not worth my time, effort, or creativity. So Lauren made them buy seven. And then I, of course, had faith in Lauren and faith in the writers. Once we started to see the early material coming in and some of the films that were coming out, the films and parody commercials, I knew we were in good shape writing and parody and comedy-wise. We had a good late-night slot. You know, there was no reason to think that it would it would fail, but we didn't have any idea what it might become and is today. I remember being before going on stage for the first sketch, breaking into someone's home to prove that their security is faulty, home security sketch with Garrett. I looked at him and he looked at me and I was thinking to myself, well, this is it. If this doesn't work, if this sketch doesn't work, or if I die during the sketch, or if there's some, I saw a nice price tag on that international snowplow back there in Canada there. And I could pick it up, with the money I got from the show. So I was ready to go right back into snowplowing.
At that point, you had to be, you were racked with insecurity about whether it's going to happen, right? Yeah.
That was my thought. If this fails, if I fail to do this, if something goes wrong, it's live. I'm just going to resign myself. I will leave New York City and I will become a snow clearance contractor. It's not a bad living, by the way.
No. Well, I think I speak for the rest of the pop culture loving world when I say that I'm glad that it didn't fail and that we got to see the everything that you would go on to do, and I get to drink some of what you've gone on to do here,
and that we got to see the work of Kristen Wiig and Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and Sherry O'Terry and Melissa McCarthy, who's essentially a
cast member. Were you at the Saturday Night Live reunion at the U.S. Comedy Arts Fest in Aspen? Did you go?
Negative. Haven't been up to Colorado for a while.
I was there. I mean, this is a long, long time. I thought of it because you brought up Sherry O'Terry, and I was friends with Sherry. And do you remember this? It's probably 20 some years ago. They did a big SNL reunion there at the Comedy Fest, and Sherry was there. And everybody from the cast would hang out at this hotel. And I remember she'd take me around and we'd sit. And at that time, I think it was like Kevin Nealon and Dennis Miller and Dana Carvey and Sandler and all these different people are sitting around. And it was just, even then, and now you've had so many years since then, so much more talent has come along. I was blown away by how someone has been able to sort of curate, and that's Lorne Michaels, to bring together. How do you do it? How do you bring together? How do you find this many incredibly funny people?
Well, by just being the greatest impresario that the century has ever seen, and by having a great ear for intelligent comedy and absurdist comedy and scatological comedy, and knowing how to mix it all up and take the cards on the board and put them all in order so that they run, so that the cranes and cameras get to where they want to be. I mean, no one else in the world does that job but Lorne Michaels, and all backed up by solid hiring of writers, solid personnel vetting, and except for the one thing there last year, but and solid, you know, solid recruitment of talent. He's got scouts all over the planet finding the best people in the business.
Well, Dan Aykroyd, I am. I have to tell you, I'm sure you probably hear this from a lot of people, but for as long as I can, remember, I said that, you know, I was a fan. I was a kid when SNL came out, but I'm pretty sure I saw every movie ever made, especially when I was young. Right, it was Dr. Detroit all down the line. And you've always been one of my favorite artists, one of my favorite entertainers, just and to have the chance to talk to you, man, and to do this is a real thrill for me. And I got to tell you, the thing that I do well is evaluate this stuff. And you have done such a fantastic job with Crystal Head. The love that you have for the brand shines through with every sip. There hasn't been a corner cut here. That's very clear. All of the accolades that you've gotten for this vodka are well-deserved because it's delicious.
The head brings people together, Daniel. So here we are. Very good. I'd love to, knock one back. Let's get the House of Blues open. Did you go to the one in Los Angeles? What a club, man.
It was such a great, right on Sunset Boulevard. And they had the, what did they call it? The foundation room upstairs.
Yep.
Yeah. And, one of the best nights of my life, Dan, was Tales of the Cocktail, the House of Blues in New Orleans. Is that the original? Was that the original? No.
No, Cambridge, Massachusetts was the original. But yeah. But New Orleans was the third one, I think.
I remember being down at Tales, and they had a House of Blues right down there in the French Quarter, and it was right after Michael Jackson died, okay? And Bacardi threw a big event at, they rented out the House of Blues, and they threw a big event, and the DJ was Jazzy Jeff, DJ Will Smith's part, and then, DJ AM was the other DJ. And they did a Michael Jackson tribute. This is a day after he died. They did a Michael Jackson tribute that was one of the most mind-blowing things I've ever witnessed. It was such a beautiful room, that house. And you're watching everybody up and down and up and down. And it's a great memory for me. And in the list of things you've done, it's kind of crazy that's so far down the list, but it was still a huge thing, the House of Blues. I mean, I saw so many shows at the House of Blues.
Well, it's going on, to 40 years of cultural preservation there, and House of Blues, 20 plus years of that. We have the largest collection of rural folk art in the world, and we celebrate the African-American songbook in every breath over there. And, we're hoping to get the venues open again soon. And I'd love to, whether it's Vegas or New Orleans or Chicago, sit with you and have a couple of cocktails and have some of our great Louisiana cooking and just hang, man. That'd be wonderful.
Dan, when this thing ends, and it's going to end, I know that, it's going, we're going to get through this. And when it does, and you, for sure, when you're in Los Angeles, I would love nothing more than to
Mastro's at the beach.
I'm right there. I'm in Venice Beach, man. It's right up the road. And you talk about food. I'm a partner in a barbecue restaurant. So what we'll do is you'll come out. We'll take a bottle of the head to the barbecue. We'll eat some barbecue, have some cocktails, and then we'll go sit out and have some drinks, watch the sun go down.
You have the head on the bar of your restaurant?
This is like a gritty barbecue. It's called Baby Blues. It's beer and wine there okay. We don't even have the full liquor license there, but, I can sneak a bottle in for us.
We'll sit in the back room.
There you go. Well, Dan Aykroyd, this has been a real pleasure. And
thank you, man.
Crystal Head Vodka, everybody out there, go get it. Drink it. It is one of the best vodkas in the world. The Russians have attested to that when they gave Dan the award. That means more to him than any other award he's ever gotten.
Now, we do have something new coming. You're the first person initially to hear this in the industry, in the wider media. We are going to have we had our bone bottle that was out there for a while. We're going to have an onyx bottle coming out, and it is beautiful, just beautiful.
Oh, wow. So it's black. It's going to be a black bottle.
Deep onyx bottle. And in it.
When is that happening?
soon. We're working on it now, but we are going to have an agave-based vodka in that. We are crossing into the agave category with the agave, the blue agave quality and premium purchase of the fruit of the piña with a specific vodka style distillation that we think is just going to blow the industry away. We're really excited.
So when Dan talks about the blue agave, that of course that's the agave used to make tequila. I'm interested to hear more about this. When that comes out, can we have you back on the show?
For sure. You're hearing about it first now. We're breaking it on your show. The Onyx Crystal Head Onyx Blue Agave vodka product is coming soon.
You heard it here first. Dan Aykroyd, everybody. Thank you, sir. It was a real honor.
Thank you. Have fun.